Blog Talk Radio.
Should have had Love Cats queued up. That's what, if we would have done this correctly, we would have started with Love Cats, maybe gone out with a little Sublime. But no, we never get things right here. We get things almost right. We have a wonderful guest. Brian is traveling. Nisha is off today. So Lori and I are going to hold down the fort. And
yeah, why the hell not?
So many important things to say. I can't even say it without laughing. So there's so much value under this tent of so much. Oh my goodness, we can't get to it in 30 minutes. We're going to have to extend the show for the whole afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you for letting us invade your ear hole. And we have one of my absolute favorites in the space. And I know I say that, you know, like every third show. But anyhow, here's the deal. This actually really is one of my favorites in the space. So, Lori, as if someone doesn't know who you are, do us a favor and introduce yourself to the audience.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Lori Rudiman, and I used to be an HR lady. Now I am a cat lady, and I'm here to be kind of the content whore that I am and promote my ebook. But really, William, if we don't talk about that, that would be okay. We could talk about, you know, body image issues, feminism, music, HR conferences, whatever you want to talk about. Let's just kill a half an hour having fun.
Right? So we got to talk about the ebook first, because we got to get
out.
So first of all, you told me about this idea when we were at Summer Brand Camp, or maybe even before then, and then you rolled it out, and now it's out at that market. So take the audience into what this is.
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, I had an agent in New York, his name is Judd, come to me and say, you've got to write your book, right? This is your calling. You are a writer. And since then, I've been in therapy because I can't seem to write a real book. And so I thought, well, all right, at some point I need to up my game and step up and put something in the market to test it. And so what I've been doing is I've been taking my keynote speeches that I've been giving for years and converting the transcripts into a thoughtful narrative. It's 40 pages, 45 pages, a quick read. And these are ideas that I've put into the marketplace. I know they're tested. And I launched the first one last week, and it's called I Am HR. And really, it's a very simple, quick read. It's well-researched. You know, it's actually an official book. And it talks about what we can do to break stereotypes within human resources and reclaim the function. Because there is a story that is being told about the average human resources professional, and it's not true. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to break stereotypes.
So it's not I'm a HR. It's I'm HR.
Well, I mean, Jesus, who else is HR? Who is the face of HR in the world, right? When you Google human resources, you get a couple other people, but for the most part, you get Lori Rudiman. So if I'm going to have this mantle, right, if people are going to associate me with a function that I've been trying to quit for the past 7 years, I might as well use my powers for good instead of evil. Although, quite honestly, I am a bit of a troublemaker. I get it. But I really love my friends in human resources, and they don't get enough credit. And if I'm going to be paid to speak and write about these things, I want to help elevate the profession that I so easily make fun of on a normal basis.
Well, you make fun of it because you care about it. So the dirty little secret there is that you actually do care about it. And this isn't new. I mean, when we first started talking with each other, 2005, 2006 area, you cared about it then, too. So, I mean, this is nothing new. You still care about it. So the ebook.
I'm an adult. I can admit it.
Right?
I'm a grown-up. It's true.
first step about denial, something. Anyhow, just
admit
there's
it.
That. The ebook strategy, you're going to release more of these, right?
I am. So I have a whole bunch of keynotes that I've delivered and continue to deliver over the years. And what I'd like to do is to be able to share it with a wider audience, especially now with the breakup, the divorce of SHRM and HRCI. Many of these keynotes were, you know, and are certified for strategic credits, and not everybody is now going to pay to go to a conference because they may not need those credits anymore, or may not want to, or actually may not have money to go to a conference, but would pay $4 to learn a little bit more about their own profession. So this is a way to expand kind of the knowledge base, reach a different audience, and reach people who maybe live in a state that only has a conference every 2 years, and they don't get the same kind of professional development opportunities.
So you're going to release a bunch of these. You're going to help the profession. I want to get your take on HRCI and SHRM. What do you make of this whole hubbub?
Aw, it's so cute, right? It's so sad how they're broken up. All right, so about a year and a half ago, I wrote a blog post where I went for a day of briefings at the Society of Human Resource Management. And I wrote this. I wrote that they had a strategy of mergers and acquisitions. It was pretty clear they were going to try, and they've gone out into the market and acquired like HRPS and a couple of different smaller associations to try to shore up executives mostly, but really to try to kind of consolidate the market and really to consolidate the revenue in the market. And so this is exactly what happened with HRCI. They went out, they tried to implement an acquisition strategy. Well, some would call it a merger, some would call it an acquisition, and it failed. It failed. This is no big deal, except that HR people aren't business people, and they don't know how to spin the message. So when Pfizer and AstraZeneca have a failed M&A strategy, they just talk about it, right? They're really honest. They're on point. When SHRM and HRCI break up and they aren't able to fulfill a merger and acquisition, they act like kids. And it's embarrassing, and it further reinforces the stereotypes that HR people don't know how to do business. So I've been quiet on this because, frankly, the market doesn't really care about my opinion, but also because I'm embarrassed. I'm just embarrassed about how this has been handled.
Yeah, it's your drunk uncle at a family reunion. Don't worry, amateurs, right?
Yeah. Like when you fail at acquiring a company, you make the story something else. You don't make it about, oh, we're gonna go do something better than the company we were going to acquire. And by the way, if SHRM does not fulfill on its promise to do a competency-based certification, they're going to look like even bigger morons. And I'm going to tell you something. Certifying for competencies is very difficult. That's an observational certification process. And what HRCI had was about as close to it as you can get, where they were looking at knowledge and trying to measure competencies through knowledge. So if you can't do what the FBI does, which is truly measure on competencies, you failed. And so SHRM is just like the board is saying one thing, the staff is saying another thing, the leadership is saying another thing, and honestly, I don't hold out a lot of hope, which is why I think there's a real opportunity for great HR pros right now to just do what they're doing, set the example, and honestly, if I can publish an ebook, anybody can do it. So I'm looking forward to like things that Steve Brown has, you know, will have to say, Jason Lauritzen, Jennifer McClure, smart people really ought to step up and talk more about the future of HR and start publishing on it. So if I can write an ebook, anybody can do it.
All right, I got to ask about body issues now. So how do body issues come about? Is this a childhood thing? Is it a parenting thing? Is it you're not taught to love your body? Like I want to find ground zero of body issues. Where is that?
Well, you know, when you hang out with like Matt Stolick and Tim Sackett, you never talk about how fat you are, right? You guys never talk about that kind of stuff.
No, they did give me a lot of grief about my beard. But other than that, they let it pass that I've gained some weight in the last couple of months. But yes.
Okay, so here's the deal. I hang out with a bunch of women, and we all talk about how much we hate our bodies. And we would never say to one another, you know, hey, wax your eyebrows. Instead, what we would say is, oh, my God, I hate my eyebrows. And I was hanging out. I'm going to say this. It's Jennifer McClure's birthday, and I was hanging out with her in Atlanta, and she was talking about how much she doesn't like her legs. That's the best goddamn thing on Jennifer McClure, right? She's got amazing legs. And she's like, I don't like the shape of my legs. And, you know, you're, and I'm sorry to out her, but she has these amazing legs, and I would kill to have Jen McClure's legs. And this is the kind of stuff that sits with us and never leaves for whatever reason, because we're women, because of society. I don't care. But it stops with me. And so one of the things I've been trying to do, you know, I don't know how I look. I really have body dysmorphia. I have no idea what my shape really looks like. I think all sorts of things about myself that are not true. But I don't have to communicate that out loud. The other thing I don't have to do is I don't have to show images of myself trying to be the prettiest or the shiniest object. I'm trying to portray a more realistic view of what I look like on social media so I can show other women, okay, this is what 39 really looks like. You know, some days are great, some days are not so great. But it stops with me, and so that's what I've been trying to do. And, you know, while I'm not writing about HR, I'm really thinking about, like, women's issues and how we portray ourselves online versus how we are in the real world, and I'm trying to close that gap.
Do you think that, and I'll just say this about women because I'm clueless about women, but do you think that some of it's just habitual and they don't really know what they're doing, or do you think that there's a sinister side to some of their stuff?
Yeah, no, I think it's a little bit of both. I think some of it is habitual. Some of it's just a way that we learn to communicate with one another in order to make ourselves feel comfortable. It's a learned behavior, a learned, you know, like a learned norm. Some of it, though, and there's a certain, just like dudes probably do this when they bro off about, you know, how much they've traveled last year or how many segments they flew or, you know, what kind of car they have, there's a lot of stuff that happens with women where we try to set ourselves apart by talking about certain things, whether it's body or fashion or whatever. And quite honestly, it gets a little old, and now that I'm almost 40, I can't believe I'm saying that, I'm just tired. Like, I want to hang out with women and talk about, like, really fun things and not talk about, I don't know, how much I hate my nose. I'm over that. I'm so over it. So, again, some of it's societal, some of it's just habitual, and sometimes bitches are bitches, right? I get that.
Yeah.
Just like bros are bros, but yeah. I don't want any part of it. I'm done.
I was in Boston a couple weeks back, and I had a 30-minute conversation with five guys in a Suburban.
Yeah.
And the entire conversation was around flight status. And
of course
status
it was.
What airports, and who'd been on Lufthansa, and who'd been into the Admiral's Club. It's like no one talked about anything of substance other than what airports and what showers to avoid. Yeah, there's all this type of.
Oh, my God.
Mindless stuff. Do women behave differently around women as opposed to when there's a group of guys? Because, like, I think you were telling me about this whole kind of an alpha woman type of syndrome where when women are alone, those types of women kind of exert a different behavior.
I think that's true, and I've seen it in my own behavior, and I can speak to this personally. First of all, when you work in human resources, you work with, you know, 80% women, and there's generally only one VP of human resources, and you feel like she's never going to go anywhere, and so you're competing instead of to be a business person. You're just competing to stab another woman in the back, to maybe gain the favor of the queen bee, to be the queen bee one day yourself. And that unhealthy behavior happens in Indiana, it happens in New York, it's just is something that's weird about the function of human resources. And I think because we don't have a lot of diversity in gender, it just causes certain behaviors. But there is one type of woman, kind of like me, who early in my career always got along better with men. And I think it was rooted in insecurity. It was rooted in an unhealthy understanding of competition. Like, I never played sports as a kid. I don't know how to compete and fail and win and do it with any grace and any poise. And I hit my 30s and I realized, I can't be friends with men because that's weird. You know, it's just strange. I have to have some females in my life. And so I really made a commitment to going out and trying to have more women friends. And I've done that through my friendship with Jennifer McClure, with Sarah White, with a lot of women in this industry, and not only women my age, but women who are older and women who are younger. I've really made an effort to break out of some of those patterns that I saw in my 20s. So some self-reflection for women who work in HR is never a bad thing. And if you don't get along with your coworkers in your 20s, it only gets harder in your 30s and your 40s.
So now I got to ask you about gender equity. So
yeah.
When
do we get to post-punk feminism?
Oh, no, it's next. That's next. It's on the list.
Okay.
So is it a destination? And what I mean by that is, how do you know you've reached the place?
Yeah, I know. It's a good question. I've been thinking a lot about this because at the intersection of a lot of things in life, when you put in capitalism, it's never going to be fair. And a lot of times when we see racism and when we see sexism, what we're really seeing is a war against working people. And it's working people who are pitted against one another. And we don't work in our best interests as part of the 99%. We're fighting among ourselves instead of fighting that 1%. Now, I know that sounds like Occupy Wall Street, but it's very true. The poor in Alabama are just as disenfranchised as the poor in Chicago or the poor in Detroit. And yet we make these really fake lines of distinction and we fight amongst ourselves and we're fighting the wrong battles. So we're fighting against unions, we're fighting for unions. Hey, why don't we fight for greater, access to education and some of the things that really make a difference early in life? But no, we're caught up in we have to have 52% women at law school and 48% men and X percent has to be Latino. And these are all really stupid distinctions because, when all is said and done, it's not even the 99% and 1%. It's really the 0.1% and everybody else who are just fighting for scraps. It reminds me when my grandmother passed away, she had about $50,000 in the bank. People in my family would gouge an eye out for that 50 grand. And really, that's like not that much money, right? And when you divide it up amongst 25 people, you get nothing. But they were clawing for such a small piece of the pie instead of thinking about the bigger issues and the bigger implications. So I don't know, gender equity, is it really about gender or should we be having a bigger, broader discussion? So
yeah, it's almost
kind of
like
a long
you scratch
answer.
Up. No, it's almost like you scratch out the word gender and just say equity.
Equity,
right. And then there goes, it's every discussion. It's every, this is an all-inclusive
totally.
Equity. So I grew up reading.
And most people, most people who are lazy pieces of crap in life never feel like they're getting a fair shot, and it's always someone else's fault. So you could be lazy and white or lazy and female or lazy and Mexican, right? It doesn't even matter. Lazy people always have a chip on their shoulder, and you're never, ever, ever going to fight that battle because they're too intellectually lazy to even have a decent conversation. So hence most of my family.
Yeah, I was about to say that you just described at least three or four branches of the family tree. Thanks.
I swear to God,
I grew up reading Camille Paglia, and so which is both good and bad as a man, but I needed those things.
All right.
I put that as kind of some context. What's your take on Lean In? I have not read the book, so I'm uninformed other than what's socially out there. What's your take on it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I haven't read it either because, again, I'm too lazy and I just like listen to what the news says about it and form an opinion. But first of all, let me just have an opinion on something I haven't read. Second of all, I applaud Sheryl Sandberg for starting a conversation like Lean In, Ban Bossy. Why the hell not? Why the hell not use your platform to have a conversation? Doesn't mean you have to be right, but it's good that she has an opinion and she's willing to do this. By the way, she doesn't have to do shit. She can be rich and run Facebook and be like 99% of the other wealthy people out there and not do anything. But the fact that she's doing something is kind of cool. Now, leaning in, leaning out, banning bossy, honest to God, I don't really care. I don't have kids. Do what you want. I'm going to die. right? Okay. But if you're a working woman, you could do worse than to read Sheryl Sandberg or follow her example and at least consider some of her ideas. So whether that's, you know, finding a spouse and really being thoughtful about the spouse that you pick who's going to support your career or trying to find balance, I don't care what you do, but think about it. And that's kind of what bugged me a little bit about the Sheryl Sandberg debate. It's almost like women weren't thinking about it until she said something, and then they didn't like what she had to say or didn't like the media representation of what she had to say, and we kind of got caught up in a meta debate instead of A, congratulating a woman for having a point of view that actually made it through the mainstream press, and then B, you know, really considering her ideas. But, you know, we live in a weird society right now, so nobody takes more than 15 seconds to have a thoughtful opinion on anything.
You know, I think one of the best bits is tackling imagery and the stereotypes that are inherent in imagery. And so, like, reclaiming, like, we all hate stock photography, but truth is stock photography runs the Internet. So if you change that and you change what women look like, meaning you give more of a truer, realistic portrayal of what women look like, not an idealized portrayal.
That's right.
It's kind of an interesting, like, we're going to reclaim the imagery, and thusly we're going to make it truer to what people, so that people can be happy with, back to body issues, so that people can be happy with whatever their cards that they're dealt, rather than to have this idealized thing held over their head. All right, so I got to ask you.
This is something so interesting, because this is the intersection of Camille Paglia and Naomi, Naomi Wolf back in the day of the beauty myth. You know, they were actually saying some of the same things, because of reclaiming that imagery, whether it's Madonna, it's the whore, whatever it is, making it more authentic and more real is going to do women a service, not only in this generation, but beyond. So Photoshop it, don't Photoshop it, but be honest about it. And that's kind of what I like about Lady Gaga, because at least Lady Gaga is celebrating the surreal, and we all know it's surreal, as opposed to Lancome, which puts a picture out of Kate Winslet or Julia Roberts, and they're unrecognizable as women, right? At least if you're going to be unrecognizable, celebrate it as art. So.
Yeah, true. All right, so I
could talk about this for hours. Okay.
Yeah, fair enough. The American dream. What's right? What's wrong? What's your take on the American dream?
Well, I don't know. I'm home in yoga pants with my cats, so the American dream looks pretty good to me. But so I'm going to tell you a story. I was at the mall the other day buying a dress for Sherm, and the woman who was selling me the dress asked me what I did for a living, and I said, oh, I write about work, and I write about the economy. And she said, well, tell me, how's the economy going? And I said, well, I'm buying a $400 dress, so it's pretty good for me. Why don't you tell me how the economy is going? And she said, honestly, it's not great. I lived beyond my means for many years, and now I'm working two jobs. But I have to say, many of us, especially during the Great Recession, were forced to live beyond our means and leverage credit cards in order just to pay our health bills, right, and to pay our normal, to buy gas to go to work. So I don't blame this woman, and I actually think it's a little tragic that she has to work two jobs. And by the way, she wouldn't have to work two jobs if wages kept pace with inflation. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Go Seattle. $15 an hour.
Yeah, well, and everybody says, well, Seattle, it's going to cause wage inflation and price inflation, but a lot of these companies can take a hit on their margins and are just being babies about it. So
that's all it is. All right, so so you and your husband.
Where's my Pulitzer?
Yeah. Right, you and your husband don't have kids, but I want to get your take on parenting advice. So things that you say, I think you have a great vista in which to look at parents and look at kids and see things differently when you have kids, because it completely clouds your judgment once you have a kid. So there you go. So what parenting advice do you give folks?
Well, I'm laughing because parents hate it when I compare their children to my cats. They just hate it, which is why I do it all the time. It's so funny to make people mad like that. Like, let me tell you about Scrubby. You see the blood vessels start to burst in the eyes. It's so awesome. But I do think that, like anything in life, the more time you spend up front, the better the rewards are. And so I see the impact of really bad parenting on a daily basis, whether I'm standing in line at Starbucks, or I'm at Target, or I'm helping a kid with his resume. I can see who invested time early. And there is this, extended adolescence in the marketplace right now that is killing me because your kids are stupid. I ordered a grilled cheese sandwich yesterday, and the kid asked me if I wanted it toasted. What kind of stupid child has been raised in the world to ask me if I want my grilled cheese toasted? Now, to be fair, he caught himself. He was like, oh, yeah, duh, right, duh. So I just like to tell parents, parents always say to me, parenting is about, picking the short battle versus the long-term battle. And, yeah, pick the long-term battle. And if it's inconvenient, too bad. You had this kid, right? You made a decision to be fertile and to have this child. Fight the long battle. That's what you're in this for. I don't care that you're tired. Guess what? That's what parenting is all about. You don't want to be tired? Don't have kids. I don't know what else to say. Do you like that?
So for HR, I did like that. That's awesome. Yeah. I took notes, actually. So for HR, for folks that are in the profession, working a desk, slogging it away, et cetera, probably listening to this radio show, obfuscating some work that they have to get done. So
right. Get back to work,
folks,
assholes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Come on now. You're not paid for this. So so what's the good fight? What's the fight that they should be fighting right now?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of really great fights. So one of the fights that often happens, especially now, is the fight for access to social media. Like, oh, my goodness, and a lot of companies still really do block Twitter, block LinkedIn. I think that's the wrong battle to fight. What I would like to fight is I like to fight the battle for better employee communications, both documents, right, and the way that we speak to employees, but really teaching employees on how to communicate about the brand, how to talk about when they're angry. We often deal with performance management issues because someone went on Twitter and really badmouthed the company. How about a 30-minute class on better conflict resolution? Like, there are just really tactical things we could be doing on a day-in, day-out basis. The other thing we do in human resources is we often punish the many because of the few. So because somebody doesn't know how to dress, nobody gets to wear casual clothes to work. Or because somebody acted like an idiot, we're no longer serving alcohol at company parties. And for me, I think it's absolutely okay to take somebody by the neck, pull them off to the side and say, you're ruining it for everybody. And by the way, I don't care if you sue me, you're acting like an idiot. Grow up and get back to work. But we don't want to fight those battles because we're oftentimes afraid of lawyers. So I think, I think HR could be a little bit more human in its application of human resources and really stop and think about the way it behaves on a daily basis.
So you're writing again. He's got about 2 minutes. So you're blogging again, which is fantastic. Thank you for coming back to the
internet. I blogged about growing out your bangs. I'm really making a contribution here.
Hey, it's the baby steps, Lori. It's baby steps.
Right.
Tell us
I was really burned out, I have to say, so it was good to take some time off.
Well, yeah, I think everyone. Good God, you had a pretty long run. If it took you 6 years to get burned out, you're doing better.
Sure. And I was blogging when I had a full time job, so that's from 2004 to my birthday in 2004. That was almost a full 10-year cycle. I was tired, and really, yeah. I'm not sure I have anything to say anymore, which is why it's really fun to be back to blogging on a daily basis, because now I want to practice writing a movie review. I have a blog. I can do that. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. And you've taken away comments that limits some of the douchebaggery. So that's good.
Oh, my God. Thank God. Well, yeah, no, to be fair, they're still around. Now they just DM me on Twitter and find me on LinkedIn send me a text message at conferences.
Send me a text. That'd be great. Yeah,
please send me 58. That'd be great.
Yeah. No, attach a photo. That'd be is Brett Favre with you? That's great.
Brett Favre, wonderful guy.
Get him to shoot a photo. That'd be great. All right, we got to run out.
Oh, crap.
Ebook address. It's IMHR is the first one. Everyone pay attention to the ebooks. She also has a newsletter.
Thank you.
If you're not on it, you should get on it so you get all the updates. Lori, thanks for taking it up a notch. Thanks for actually
inviting me.
Yeah, this was good. This was fun. We didn't need Nietzsche or Brian. We could hold this down ourselves. We did okay.
William, please. We know who owns this brand. Well, actually, it's Nietzsche and Brian. They're so great.
Yeah. William comes in, dances around every once in a while. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to Drive Through HR. We're going to roll out to a little Love Cats.
Bye, guys.
All right, thanks, William.
Bye, dude.